Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Governor Greg Abbott really wants school vouchers to become a thing in Texas. He wants it so bad that he launched a civil war within the state's Republican Party to primary loyal conservative fellow Republicans who stood against his voucher plan. Abbott wants to take dollars that would go to traditional public schools and siphon them off to help pay for tuition for school students in private schools. Abbott has framed vouchers as parental rights, and he calls it school choice. But what he doesn't talk about, that this is the agenda of billionaires like Tim Dunn and brothers Ferris and Dan Wilkes. They are funding the political campaign for vouchers. They have poured millions of dollars into legislative candidates who are promoting vouchers. The men also fund or serve on boards of a host of public policy and advocacy organizations that have led the fight for vouchers in Texas. And the reason why so many Republican lawmakers who typically go along to get along, why did they stand firm this time, even at the cost of their office, is because they firmly believe that vouchers are bad for Texas, especially in rural Texas, where school districts are the biggest employers and they are the center of the community. So this is playing out right now in Texas. It's part of our November election, and Abbott is betting that voters will elect Republicans who pass vouchers. So there are a lot of questions like, why are billionaires so interested in pushing vouchers? How do we know for sure that vouchers are bad public policy? Josh Cohen has written about that in his new book called Privateers: How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers. And Josh, welcome to The Source.
Yeah, thanks for having me, David.
So we hear from pro-voucher Republicans like Ted Cruz, our senator, all the time. They say things like school vouchers, it is the civil rights issue of our time. And I would say, no, civil rights are the civil rights issue of our time. But why do they frame it that way? What's the appeal?
Well, they frame it that way because, listen, it's important to take a step back and remember that the voucher idea first came about in 1955, just months after Brown versus Board, and Southern states, well, all states, but particularly segregationists in the South, saw this as a way to potentially skirt the Supreme Court's mandatory integration orders, and from the beginning saw this as a way to kind of separate and isolate kids from each other in something resembling a legal way. Fast forward to where we are today, the modern voucher systems that began in 1990 and onward did begin as means tested, as programs based on lower incomes, eligibility in primarily urban areas. But the last 2-3 years have really expanded into something very different, which is a program that largely benefits kids who are already in private school and wealthier communities. And so sort of the packaging and the framing of this as the civil rights issue of our time is almost sort of a stolen valor from the original civil rights movement, and is almost thumbing the issue back in their face. But really what it's intended to do is sort of window dress today's voucher systems, which really are just handouts for existing private school students.
So you mentioned the 1955 essay by Milton Friedman, where he first trotted out the idea for school vouchers. And he said, wouldn't it make more sense if we gave our parents just some money, then they could spend it on the education system of their choice, and that they could just take that money and make it portable rather than putting it all into a single public school system, which had worked for generations, was very successful in educating students and also helping immigrants become better Americans, learning the American system, and it was seen around the world as a successful education system. But then we had Brown v. Board of Education, which said we can't separate but equal is no longer going to work for us. We need to integrate our schools and no more just whites only schools. And we had a reaction from that, particularly in the South, you know, from Virginia all the way on down here to Texas, where all sorts of schemes were cooked up to try to sidestep Brown. And one of them was vouchers and saying, okay, we want vouchers because we want to be able to send our students away from the public school system where they can decide they want to be segregated.
Yeah, well, and in fact, in the Texas case, the legislature's bill never ended up passing. That's why we're still having this conversation today. But the Texas legislator proposed a bill in the wake of Brown that actually would have required parents to sign an affidavit saying they were applying for the voucher specifically because they were opposed to racial integration. But listen, the important thing to remember, whether it's 1955 and Milton Friedman, or whether it's the 1990s and Betsy DeVos, or whether it's DeVos and Koch and the Texas billionaires you mentioned earlier today with Greg Abbott, the idea of giving every parent a coupon sounds great in theory. So, but you have to remember with these voucher schemes, it's not actually parental choice. It's the school's choice. The schools always get to pick the children, and there's no legislation anywhere in the country right now, that whether it's passed, whether it's stalled in a legislature, that does not allow the private schools to do the picking when it comes to their kids. So all of this sort of falls flat the minute it gets off the page. When it comes to being implemented in practice, parents may all be given out a voucher, but it's only the ones that can get into the schools they want to get into that are going to, in theory, benefit at all. And schools get to pick the kids that they serve in the case of a voucher system.
Right. So when we saw Abbott going across the state of Texas, giving speeches, promoting his voucher plan, he only went to private schools. He didn't go to public schools. And we know for a fact, it's been established, we know this is true, that this is only going to help people, students who are already in private schools or who were likely would have gone to a private school anyway. It's just a way to subsidize their private tuition. And so how does that equate the school choice or the education reforms that Abbott says are so necessary?
Well, the tell is that he is going to exclusively private schools to make this case. If this were about, you know, opportunity to build off of public schools or to improve on public schools, he'd be going to public schools or at least near them to make the case. What he's doing is going to private schools to whip up support for what amounts to a garden variety interest group subsidy for existing behavior. 70% of voucher users in state after state were already in private school to begin with, or at least had never been enrolled in public school of any sort. And that number's held up again in state after state over the course of the last several years. So it's a good bet to assume about 70% of Texas kids will have already been in private school when they get that voucher. For the 25 or 30% or so who do transfer from public schools, we see some of the worst academic declines in the history of education research. And the reason for that is the schools that do take kids transferring in, that do open their doors to those children, tend to be what I call subprime. They're financially distressed, they're not particularly good, or at least they're not mission-driven with respect to academic improvement, and the results show.
We're going to take a break. Our phone lines are open if you want to talk about school vouchers, school choice. Do you think that this the billionaires created a culture war in order to attack the public school system and then to help them sell school vouchers? We want to hear from you. Also, is this an attack on teachers' unions? Is there a labor issue here as well? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues after a 1 minute break. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The title of the book is The Privateers, How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers. The author is Josh Cohen. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to a caller, Hamza. Hamza, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk about the what's going to be coming up in the upcoming 2025 legislative session. We're going to see, basically, Abbott is guaranteed that we will see vouchers go through. And one of the biggest fights for protecting schools or public schools, in my opinion, is actually going to be happening here in San Antonio with the HD 121 and HD 118, which are two very competitive San Antonio races. And I just wanted y'all to maybe even talk about sort of the gerrymandering that's caused a lot of these districts to go one way or the other, and sort of the Republican primaries with Steve Allison even losing his seat because of this issue. And so just wanted to hear y'all's thoughts.
All right, Hamza, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. So, Josh, in your book, you make a lot of connections between the push for school vouchers and things like an attack on voting rights and gerrymandering and things like that. Yeah. And, when I'm thumbing through the book, I say, well, that seems like a stretch. But then I read it, and I see where you're getting at. Can you tell us more?
Yeah. Yeah, so the important thing to remember, I mean, listen, vouchers are two of the first three paragraphs in the Project 2025 education chapter. All right, they are the centerpiece of the Trump and Project 2025 education agenda. Many of the big donors and funders behind both Project 2025, the Heritage Foundation, and a number of the big advocacy groups out there on a number of right-wing priorities, not just vouchers, but rollbacks to reproductive rights, new restrictions on LGBTQ rights, things like that, all kind of are funded and supported by these same right-wing billionaire groups, in including election denial, I might add. But to get, you know, without knowing specifically about the legislative districts in the San Antonio area, one thing I would just add is that, you know, the playbook here really is going at the state legislators and in particular vulnerable Republicans or rural Republicans, as you mentioned at the top. And that's because vouchers have never actually survived a statewide ballot initiative when it's actually put to the vote of state voters, whether they're in states that have voted for Republican presidents and governors and senators in the past, or whether they've voted for Democrats. Vouchers have never survived statewide ballot initiatives. So the other side on this issue, the sort of billionaire-backed groups absolutely have to resort to, you know, legislative maneuvering, primarying vulnerable members, in some cases, gerrymandering specifically just to scrape bills through. If they had widespread support for these things, but Texas would have passed vouchers months or even years ago. I mean, I can't remember how many special sessions there have been in your state right now. I think we're up to past half a dozen, perhaps, but it's been quite a number. And the reason that sort of it took all of this effort is that in general, there's just not the kind of support for these schemes that the other side claims there is. And so they have to go to these kind of extraordinary legislative measures to ram these bills through.
Well, there was a poll that showed that it was recent that the majority of Texans did support school vouchers. Most, according to the poll from most Texans agree with arguments against school vouchers, but in the end, they would still support legislation that makes programs like that available to all families in the state. And that's according to the survey. And it also found that Black adults were more supportive of school vouchers than any demographic include in that poll.
Yeah, so listen, I mean, we have to acknowledge that, particularly for lower income families and in some cases for communities of color, public schools mirror and reflect society. So to the extent that public schools, to the extent that society and American society, the American economy, still have income-based and race-based inequality in many parts of the country, that public schools would reflect some of that. And so it's not surprising that some of these folks are skeptical of arguments that these schools have always worked well for them. But, you know, the same polling, if you ask parents about public schools in general, they'll express some skepticism. But then if you ask them about their own public school, is it working for you? Then they'll say yes, in general, on average, vast majorities. And the other thing to understand about these polls, and I'm not, you know, a poll unskewer. I think we take seriously well done surveys, and we talk about why they show what they show. You know, I think a lot of folks, if everybody understood why vouchers perform so poorly and why they are, as I call them, the education equivalent of predatory lending, I think majorities would oppose these things. If you sort of explained to voters and to parents, listen, you have to leave your public school. You can't just get this savings account and stay in your public school, number one. Number two, the private schools will do the choosing. You do not get to choose your school. You can walk around with a coupon and knock on every door, but if there's no room at the inn for you in your chosen private school, you don't get in. When you start to explain those things, the same voters who said, you know, I like the idea of a freedom account or something, they start to express extreme skepticism of these voucher schemes. And in fact, the very voters who are most likely to express that skepticism are the ones that are going to be most vulnerable for that kind of discrimination, that kind of door shutting when it comes to the private schools picking their kids.
Let's go to the caller. Deborah is on the line. And Deborah, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'm a retired educator. I was in the public school system here in Texas for 35 years. And my major concern about, well, I have many concerns, but about the voucher programs is that I feel like Governor Abbott has held hostage our public schools, and we have gotten no new money for several, I forget how many years now, for our budgets. And a lot of our school districts in the state of Texas are starting with budgets that are already in a deficit. And so it seems like to me, with all these special sessions that he's had trying to get vouchers through, it's like, okay, once y'all approve vouchers, then maybe we'll look at public schools. And I just don't feel that's fair. And I agree, if you want a voucher, you should get a voucher, but not at the expense of our public schools and all the other children. For example, I'm a special ed teacher, ESL teacher. And you know what? Our ESL and special ed areas are needing money desperately to meet these kids' special needs.
Mm-hmm. Well, Deborah, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Get your reaction, Josh Cohen.
Yeah, so vouchers defund public schools, and they do so in two ways. They first do so by committing new state resources, new taxpayer resources to existing private school students, as we already talked about, number one. And number two, they do on the margins pull a few kids out of public schools and leave those local public schools, your community schools, with the costs that still remain to keep the lights on, to run the buses, to pay teachers, and so on. But listen, the other side knows that defunding public schools is very unpopular. And so they go to great lengths to avoid the reality that that vouchers are direct financial threats to local school districts. And whether it's in Texas or in Arizona or Ohio or Florida, we've seen some of the real budget crunches coming in. But in Texas, you know, you have to, I'm glad this point that the public school funding is being held hostage to some extent by the voucher bill. Listen, to believe that your local public schools will not suffer financially from a voucher scheme once it's passed, you have to believe that the assurances of folks who are holding hostage public school funding until it's passed. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. There's not a lot of trust involved. The reality is these things, there's only so much money to go around. It's not just actually even public schools, it's public services in general, roads, environmental, corrections, and so on and so forth the check comes to do when you pass these things. But it's absolutely true that these are funding threats to public schools, and that has to be included at the top of any discussion on this issue.
Right. So I just want to clarify, because Governor Abbott, when he gives his speech about his voucher program, he says traditional public schools will not suffer. We will not take money away from traditional public schools to pay for vouchers. And you're saying that statement doesn't hold a lot of credibility because of what he's doing to public schools right now, where he refused to increase funding for them. He vetoed increased funding for them because he was not able to pass vouchers in Texas.
Yeah, voucher supporters like Abbott are relying on an overly tedious and technical claim. No one's saying they're going to go into the state budget and reduce the per pupil funding per se. But remember, a failure to increase funding as costs are increasing is mathematically the same thing as a cut. And any household budget works the same way. Listen, you can't, if my gas prices are going up, it's harder to pay my mortgage, even though my mortgage comes out of, I have a different spot in the budget for my mortgage. It's still harder to pay if gas prices are going up. And that's the state budget works the same way when we're talking about public schools. You can carve out half a billion or $1 billion, was what we're up to in Arizona, Florida, and Ohio already for their voucher schemes. You could carve all this money out from different spaces in the state budget, but it's going to be harder and harder to increase public school spending as costs to those local schools go up. And what that means is your local school district is going to suffer, is going to have a harder time paying its own bills, which is, again, the same thing as any household head can tell you in any part of the country. It's difficult to pay all those bills when costs are going up.
Now, the caller, Henrietta, you're on the air.
Thank you. I love your show. It educates me every day.
Thank you.
The concern is these vouchers. Where or who thought about this thing? Because is it also the charter schools? People, persons that teach there are not certified. They don't have the full qualification to teach, which is not good because our children, and also what concerns me is if it's a minority child and he is in this charter school, they don't have to teach to his level. They are only obligated to teach to the rich, to the ones that are more affluent than a poor.
Henrietta, thank you for your call. We appreciate your question about do these private schools with the vouchers, do they have to have qualified teachers?
So that differs by state. And in some cases they do, and in some cases they don't. You have extreme examples like Arizona, where vouchers don't even need to be background checked right now to teach in a voucher school. And then in other states, especially the states that have older traditions of running these things, states like Wisconsin, there is some more oversight on who goes into these schools and what the schools need to do to stay accredited. So there is a lot of wide variety on this, but I will say the trend has been toward less and less oversight of voucher schools, partly because the results have been so bad that the other side has sort of pushed away a lot of new oversight provisions in the latest bills. It remains to be seen, though, what the details would be in Texas.
Right. So, but traditionally or widely speaking, voucher schools, a private school that takes voucher money, it would have less regulation than a traditional public school.
I would use the word oversight, but yes, they have fewer requirements for financial disclosure, academic accountability, and even in some cases, building and student safety.
Right. And so, people see that as a benefit. Some, they're going to say, well, we don't have to worry about state rules. We can teach children how we see best.
Well, the question then becomes, what's the best use of public resources, right? And the argument that the other side, on the voucher side, makes on this is that if some of this is about improving on public schools and giving a new opportunity for kids stuck in so-called failing schools, then it makes sense to, the first question should be, okay, do they do better? Are they safer? Are they healthier? Are they learning more? And if the answers to those things turned out to be yes, then this would be a different conversation perhaps. But overwhelmingly, the answers have turned out to be no. The bigger and the more recent the voucher scheme in state after state after state, the worse the results have been.
Joshua Cohen is a professor of education policy at Michigan State University, senior fellow at the Education Law Center. His new book is The Privateers, How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers. We're going to continue our conversation into the next half hour. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And I've got Paul. I see you on the board. I'll get you on the air when we come back from this 2-minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. School vouchers will be part of the election that we're going to be having in November in Texas, depending on the outcome with the Texas House of Representatives. If there are enough Republicans elected, which will probably be the case, will they support school vouchers? And Greg Abbott has spent a lot of money trying to defeat and primary Republican office holders to keep them from coming back to Austin to get school vouchers passed. Well, why is that? What are the stakes and what could be the outcomes? We're talking with Josh Cohen. He is the author of the book, The Privateers, How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers. And let's go to a caller. And we have Paul. And Paul, you're on the air.
I have a question. My wife's a school teacher at Alamo Heights. And the superintendent has announced to every school in the deal that they are out of money. And in January, they may not be getting a paycheck. What happens when that happens to the teachers? Do the schools just shut down? And then also, what happens to all the kids? They're piling kids in there because they're trying to get that extra money. But, I mean, what's the next step? What happens?
Wow. Paul, thank you so much for that call. Appreciate it. And for your information, Josh Cohen, Alamo Heights is one of the most more affluent parts of the San Antonio area. School district has always been seen as one of the best school districts in the region. This is jarring to hear that.
Yeah. So, you know, different states have different sort of rules on this and different districts, even as far as what happens when individual schools close. Just want to kind of honor what Paul said and just acknowledge that this kind of financial threat to districts is already happening as states like in Texas are sort of refusing to increase public school funding, even without vouchers. And vouchers just exacerbate all that. We see in places like Arkansas, next door to you all, in Iowa, which also recently passed a voucher scheme, rural communities in particular are starting to have to close and consolidate. And these are trends that are made worse by the voucher system. There are longer term population changes that are contributing to this, but it's not, students don't have to be fleeing public schools for there to still be enormous financial pressure on those schools as costs are going up, but as revenue is being held hostage and not keeping up with the cost of new expenses.
But Texas has a super budget surplus, billions and billions of dollars. It's not because of a lack of cash. It's because they don't want to spend the money on public schools.
Right.
And it does seem like if you've been following the situation as I have over the years, you've seen that public schools have been deliberately targeted by Republican leadership in Texas using through culture wars and book bans and to erode faith in the public school system. And is that deliberate to try to drive people to go to alternative schooling?
Well, I mean, listen, don't take my word for it. Christopher Rufo, the right-wing provocateur influencer, has said, and I quote this in my book, in a speech to Hillsdale College, a right-wing sort of off-the-grid college near me, actually, in Michigan. He said, to get universal school vouchers, you need to undermine public confidence in schools and undermine folks' ability to get the education you need from those schools. So it's not, you know, I don't... individual parents, when they go into their schools and they see that they're missing adequate ventilation or adequate heating and cooling, or the buses aren't running on time or always breaking down or something because of the result of inadequate revenue to keep up with costs, of course they're going to start to look around. And so, yes, some of this is really deliberate. And you know, I think it goes part and parcel with both budget choices. Budgets are moral documents. When states make budgets, they're putting their values into play. And so when the state of Texas has this surplus, has the money available and says, we're still going to hold public schools hostage until we get our way with a voucher scheme, then that's telling you, where the values are and what the desired outcome is supposed to be as far as these folks are concerned.
Now, the caller, let's go to Ken. And Ken, you're on the air.
Hey, Yes, sir. I'm a real estate agent. I don't have children. They're grown, but I have grandchildren. And I don't understand. We pay some of the highest real estate taxes in the country, and 60% of it minimum goes to the school district. But yet, I guess I'm naive. How can we force Governor Abbott to release the money? Because we pay for it on a daily basis, but yet the schools are needing the money.
Ken, I don't know if we have an answer for you, but Josh Cohen, your reaction?
Well, so in general, it's a good point. So the typical school district is sort of about partly funded by local property taxes, as you're describing, then partly funded by state revenue. And for many districts, the state share of that public funding is really the important piece for both sort of short-term income-based equality. For different districts may have different property values to draw on from their tax base, but it's also really important for the long term when, you know, recessions come and go, when the economy is booming, when the economy is less healthy. It's the states that actually have the ability to kind of weather some of that storm. And so all districts benefit from having states as real partners in funding their local school districts. And so what we're talking about with the money being held hostage today, we're talking about the state portion of that revenue. And, you know, times are booming in some of these wealthier districts with high property values, but that's not always true. We saw during the Great Recession, many districts that had otherwise been wealthy and economically healthy suffered substantially from the Great Recession's pressures, economic pressures. And it was the state share of their funding that really kept them through those lean periods and allowed them to flourish later. And that's exactly that sort of rainy day money that's getting held hostage here when we talk about these voucher schemes.
But Josh, why are billionaires so interested in school vouchers that they would spend millions and millions of dollars funding programs and candidates, doing everything they can to push school vouchers? What's in it for them?
You know, they want to make the world look the way they think it should. In the case of, say, Betsy DeVos from my state, this is about Christian nationalism. This is about, you mentioned at the top, Betsy DeVos has publicly lamented the place of public schools in local communities as the centers of local communities and Friday Night Lights and everything like that. She wants churches to go back to being the centers of communities. I happen to think many churches still are the centers of communities, including my own church. But you know, but there is this idea that public schools have taken up too much of a space in community life. The other side, other versions of this with the sort of Mark Charles Koch type organizations would be more interested in just sort of getting what they view as the government out of all forms of public policy. And that includes education, but isn't limited to that. Certainly they talk about this in health and in environment and everything else. So you know, these different sort of mass accumulators of wealth all have a different kind of, you know, maybe underlying motivation, but where they meet on this issue is on dismantling public schools and giving folks vouchers to sort in a free-for-all market.
We know that school vouchers would work really well with, like, you know, Catholic schools, you know, religious education. But it doesn't have to be, I guess, because it could be any religion, right? Even some that aren't politically popular. Why isn't that an issue here?
Well, historically, many private schools were Catholic. And even today, 90% of all private schools in the country are religiously affiliated in some way. And of course, the vast majority of those are Christian. There are, of course, some Islamic private schools and some Jewish private schools and so on. But the vast majority are Christian, evangelical in nature, and or Catholic. And many of them are very strong, both academically and in lots of other ways. But I want to stress, remember, that when it comes to these voucher schemes, it really all depends on if you can get into the school that you want. And we see when vouchers come to town, these schools really do the choosing. So the schools, keep their admissions criteria however they want them to be. And if you can get in, you know, there's an argument to be made that maybe you're going to benefit if it's your top choice of school. But, you know, just go over to New Orleans, where I've done a lot of work and other researchers have done a lot of work. We saw on average parents were getting their fourth choice of school. And these were more likely to be rated D or F on the state's academic report.
Well, New Orleans
card.
Has been studied heavily because after Katrina, it wiped out basically the public school system when we saw this influx of charter schools and private schools to take up the slack. And so it's a unique area. And how are the outcomes?
They're terrible. So in New Orleans, actually, unfortunately, sad to say, the academic impact of transferring to these D and F private schools for those vulnerable kids actually exceeded the negative declines caused by students who suffered through Katrina. And that sounds like a big thing to say, but it's actually well documented in the research literature. And the reason for that, again, goes back to the fact of which are the schools that are actually taking these children, which are the schools that have open seats. It's the schools that are struggling subprime. They're willing to take whoever comes to their door in exchange for the funding and the cash flow. It's the more elite schools, the schools that might have stronger academic impact, that close their doors to the typical students, or at least have, you know, substantial admissions requirements and hurdles to jump through. So, you know, parents really need to understand when they're listening to these bills, that may sound great, that I'm going to get a coupon for some private schools that I might want to sort through. But the devil's in the details, and you have to show that you've been admitted to these private schools. You have to guarantee yourself admission to that school before you really can have a sense of whether it's going to work for you.
Right. And education opportunity, you only get seventh grade once, I hope, not twice, maybe, but, you know, you want it to count. Let's take a break here. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues right after this. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about school vouchers, a hot issue in Texas right now. And we're joined by Josh Cohen. He is the author of The Privateers, How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers. You can call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we have Randall on the phones. And Randall, you're on the air.
You touched on it just a moment ago when you brought together Friday Night Lights and religion. I read something this past weekend that all the televised NFL games this past weekend averaged 21 million viewers per game. Per game. What church, what religion, what religious cult can match that kind of devotion? High school football feeds the NCAA. The NCAA feeds the NFL. I mean, if the public school system disappears, Friday Night Lights is gone. We're going to see a cultural meltdown of cataclysmic proportions. Rioting, tailgating, propane grills turned into IEDs. I mean, it's going to be mayhem. The apocalypse.
Randall, thank you for the call. But Josh Cohen, that's an important point. There are a lot of people in the rural areas do not support school vouchers because they don't like what they think it may do to their high school football team.
Well, remember, both in rural communities and elsewhere, the public schools that do serve many functions, they are community centers, they have after-school programs, they have football programs. Often 4-H clubs are run out of those public schools. They may provide meals to some children, depending. You know, we're talking at the national level about whether or not universal school meals is a good policy plan. It has a lot of evidence behind it. I think it's the right thing to do as well. But those are the kinds of things you can't do when you're spending lots of money on a voucher system. The other thing I wanted to kind of add, you know, the voucher side would say to this, well, listen, there are four churches in a certain town in one public school system. And so if you're giving everybody a voucher, they can just choose between, you know, their four churches and their public school. And again, I can't stress enough that only works when the schools are open to aligning their choices with the parent choices. The schools do the choosing, and if it works out for the parent's choice, then so be it. But nothing is sort of unifying in that way, like those community centers. And at some point, you have to kind of make decisions about how are we going to live in a community together, and are we going to kind of be all in together on this, or are we going to kind of separate and isolate out everybody to the schools that will take them and that they can find their way into, and the rest of us are sort of left to fend for ourselves. Like, that's the vision we're talking about at the end of the day here.
J.P. Green, someone that you cite in the book, I guess, about 40 times. He's with the Heritage Foundation, one of their education guys. He has written a response to your book. He is extremely critical of it. He says you dismiss the importance of studies finding positive effects from school choice programs, vouchers. And he also says that you are basically a conspiracy theorist looking at an organization known as the Council for National Policy as the big boogeyman behind the vouchers. And he says he says that it's not that big of a deal. The Council for National Policy, I've never heard of it. What about that?
Yeah, well, the Council for National Policy plays a small role in the book. The important piece are the important name is Betsy DeVos. The important name is Charles Koch. The important piece are the sort of the billions of dollars behind the organizations, that including the Heritage Foundation. Again, Heritage, of course, is critical of this book. They also say that Donald Trump won election 2020. They also say that that we have
and they say he won last night's debate. So there
you
go.
Yeah, they say he won last night's debate. So, and you know, they're flying flags upside down in solidarity with Trump when he was convicted of various crimes. So I don't take seriously a lot of critiques coming out of the Heritage Foundation, but I would say that, you know, it's certainly true that if you move the goalposts, implicit in the Heritage critique is that if you move the goalposts far enough, you'll find something to say that's good about vouchers. And, you know, I even say in the book, listen, there are, you might find some parent satisfaction with some voucher programs. And, you know, we don't dismiss all those things, but remember, these things are sold as academic opportunities and as ways to improve on public schools. And as long as we're, I'm not here to defend test scores in every instance, but as long as we're using test scores to evaluate public schools, then at the minimum, we ought to be using those same metrics to evaluate any alternative, including voucher schemes. And it's on those exact metrics that we're holding public schools accountable for that vouchers fail and fail and fail and time again. So again, it's just, you can move the goalposts as far as you want. The reality is, if they had the data to sort of show these things we're working for kids, we probably wouldn't even be having this debate right now, because everybody would sort of come on board and we'd all join the voucher party. But that's just not what the data say.
Well, you know, there are probably some families that benefit from vouchers, but we don't want the government to craft public policy to benefit a few select families. When we scale up a program like vouchers, we see what really happens, and the data is there. And you're telling us that the data is bad, particularly for low-income communities and families. They really suffer the most. And you called it the education equivalent of predatory lending. And that is a very provocative statement, and I really need you to give me more to back that up.
Yeah, so the bigger and the more recent the voucher scheme, the worse the results have been. So what happens when and I cite the positive studies in my book, but what they're all old. The last study to show that vouchers improved academic outcomes, particularly in math, came in 2002, 22 years ago. The last study to show that vouchers improved educational attainment came in 2013, 11 years ago. Since then, as vouchers have gotten bigger and more recent, we've seen just catastrophic impacts on kids' learning. And at the same time, these things are still marketed as opportunity, when in fact kids are getting shuffled into the few kids who do transfer from public schools are shuttled into these subprime schools. And so that's what I mean when I call it the education equivalent vouchers are of predatory lending. A lot of promise up front and failure to deliver on the back end for kids and families.
Let's go to the caller, Jorge. And Jorge, you're in the air.
Hey, thank you for having me. So this is a two-parter, and I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer the first part. But as far as Texas is concerned, who are, like, the millionaires and billionaires that are receiving some kind of benefit from doing this? And then the second part, because I've been in those data holes where everything seems like it's doom and gloom, but what can we do? Like, what's that first step to ensuring that public education is enshrined and kept as this, like, monument to the basis of our society.
All right, Jorge, thank you very much. So in your book, you never make a claim that anyone is lining their pockets with this plant. You're taking these billionaires who are driving this, and in Texas, the most prominent ones are Tim Dunn and the brothers Ferris and Dan Wilkes, and they made their money in fracking, and good for them. They made a lot of money. Now they want to spend some of their abundance dealing with an issue that they think will be benefit for the America and for mankind, which they think is school vouchers. But and you're saying they're misled, or they are Christian nationalist, and some people can make that argument that they are.
You know, yeah, I don't get into sort of listen the Betsy DeVos and Wilkes and the Dunn. These folks don't need new sources of revenue. They're billionaires already many times over. I don't get into that kind of profiteering piece in the book. It's called The Privateers, not The Profiteers. And a lot of this is just ideology. This is the way they want the world to look. And they believe that it should look this way. And they're putting their money behind that. And, you know, you can make an argument. I happen to think there should be some restrictions on the amount of money that could be spent trying to influence public policy. But right now, that's the lay of the land. And, you know, what they are not, manifestly, what they are not are just average working families and parents struggling to get by paycheck to paycheck and trying to kind of make do in their public schools and hoping that their public schools are funded well enough to see their kids through to adulthood. That's not the typical person backing these schemes. And so, we can debate kind of what the motive here. I'm not in these guys' hearts and minds, but we do know that they are not grassroots parents organizing. They are, in fact, some of the wealthiest people on the planet.
Yeah, but they grew up, they made that money. So,
I don't begrudge them their wealth. I'm simply saying that the idea doesn't work.
Right. So what about the other points to Jorge's question? Like, what can people do in order to protect the Texas public school system? I mean, Texas, we had the San Antonio versus, the Rodriguez versus SAISD. That was here locally. That lost in the Supreme Court. Edgewood versus Kirby, another local case where we tried to get more funding for public schools here in Texas, and it failed. It does seem like the deck is stacked against people who want strong public schools, who fund public schools.
Well, I read my Bible every day, and Gospel of Matthew, Jesus says, where our treasure is, there our hearts will be also. And you fund public schools, it actually works. It's the right thing to do, but it's got substantial research and evidence behind it that if we want to improve public schools, it's not rocket science. We have to pay for it, and we have to invest in those public schools directly. Everything starts with that. There are lots of other evidence-based solutions to make public schools work better for every and for more people. New teacher pipeline investments, especially in grow your own programs that draw on local community members to go into public schools to teach. After school programs, early childhood programs, universal school meals, frankly. Turns out, and any parent would tell you this, hungry kids don't learn as well, right? Cold and hot kids don't learn as well. So investments in air and heating and cooling, those things actually work. We have good solid evidence behind them, but those are the things that are off the table when voucher schemes come to town.
Joshua Cohen, his book is The Privateers, How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers. Joshua, thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.